Hey, 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 Closet Busters, come on and gather around. It's time once again to kick down those closet doors of life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemens, bold move expert and coming out coach, and I'm going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloseted. So come on, grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step in to living your truth as we explore more stories, tips, and tricks for living your life uncloseted. Now let's get to the show. Hey there, closet dwellers and bold move makers. It is time once again for Life Uncloseted. And you know what we are? We're the place where we just say, you know, we're going to kick those closet doors down. We're going to go do what we're meant to do in life and be who we're meant to be. And sometimes to get out of that closet, well, you might just have to say yes to something that you least expect that's really going to take you places that you never thought you'd go. In fact, for most of us, we go to these places, we take certain career paths, we find the people we think we're supposed to be in love with, we do the things we're supposed to do, have the kids we're supposed to have, travel wherever we think, and then suddenly one day something that just least expected shows up. And in the excitement, you say yes. And then the next moment you're saying, oh shit, what did I just do? And I think those are the most beautiful moments of uncloseting ourselves, to really stepping into what we're being called to do. And I'm really excited to be talking to this fellow National Speakers Association member. Her name is Dr. Shireen McHenry. She said yes, she opened up her closet doors, and then suddenly she stepped into a life that, well, wasn't really anticipated, but man, she totally loved it here. And that's why I wanted to bring her on to the show, because sometimes you just got to start saying yes to really get where you're going. So I'm going to shut up, bring her on, and say, welcome, Shireen, to the show. So happy to have you here with me today.
Thank you, Rick. I'm thrilled to be a guest on your show.
Oh, it's awesome. And, you know, the little bit of your story that I've been looking at and looking at your site and what you speak on, I love that. I guess you would say you kind of stumbled into doing what you do now, right?
I absolutely stumbled in there. I had no idea. In fact, when I was in ninth grade, I took a speech class that was required, and I got the giggles that only a ninth grade girl got. I couldn't stop laughing enough to breathe. I'm shaking, and the teacher looked at me and he said, sit down and take an F. I've never gotten an F in anything in my life. It makes me get a little teary-eyed just talking about it. And I remember years of shame coursing down my face as I slunk back to my desk and I put my head down and I said, I don't like to speak. And I endured the rest of the semester because I had to, but the seed got planted that I didn't like to speak. And I became a professor, which had been my long-held dream. In the first semester, a colleague knocked on the door and said, hey, Shireen, somebody backed out of speaking at a conference. Would you like to fill in? And I said, sure, because everything sounds good in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then within 10 minutes after she walked away, I went, what did I just do? I don't like to speak.
Right,
and
right.
I passed out for the next 2 months. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly. I know. I've done that same thing. In fact, actually, ironically, I did that a couple of months ago. I said yes to something, and it's not in my ballywick of speaking at all. I mean, it's not far out, but I said yes, and I'm like, wait, what am I going to talk about here? This is like, you know, this is like stepping back into my old industry, in fact. And I was like, I haven't been in that industry in years, and I talk about bold moves, and I talk about, you know, uncloseting things, and I'm like, oh, wait, Rick, back up. You can do this. You just got to get a little creative. So so you said yes, and you just stepped into it.
I did. I stressed out for 2 months, but I prepared because I didn't want to let her down. And I also didn't want to say no, even though every bit of me wanted to say no. I went, no, I'm a person of my word. I'm a person of integrity. I'm not going to back out and leave somebody hanging. So I went into this conference shaky and knowing I didn't like to speak, and I started and I made them laugh, Rick, and I went, that is fun. Uh-huh. And the more they laughed, the funnier I got and the more fun I had. And I went, oh my gosh, this is fun. And so somebody afterwards said, would you come and speak to our group? I'm like, sure, because now I love to speak.
Right.
And it took me a couple of years, and as I honed my craft, and somebody finally said, what would it cost to bring you in? I'm like, you can get paid to do that? I didn't know you could get paid for something so fun.
Oh, how funny.
So the savvy businesswoman that I was, I said, I don't know. How much money do you have?
Right.
I had to learn how to be a businesswoman. So a little while later, after I inked out little bits of money, I figured out people made a living. And I went, that's what I want to do. This being a professor is okay. I like the teaching part. I'm good at it. It's a really good job. I became a tenured full professor, but it never filled my soul. But this speaking was like what I call the hot part of my soul. Mm-hmm. Like teaching was lukewarm. Speaking was like hot, hot, hot. And I found the National Speakers Association, learned how to be a businesswoman. And 6.5 years ago, I left a tenured full professorship at age 48. Wow. And people thought I was crazy. They just couldn't understand that I would leave a great job. Right. And what I thought was, it is a great job, but it's not a great job for me. Mm-hmm. And despite my deepest fear, Rick, I was so terrified that I wouldn't make enough money to eat. Mm-hmm. Like even now I can tap back into that fear. Yep. It was almost overwhelming that I would be in the poorhouse. And I just had so much anxiety as I took this leap of faith and left my professorship. But I just knew in my soul that it was the right job and the right time. But my last day of work, I was a marshal at graduation, sitting on the front row with the graduate students. And all of a sudden, I felt like I had run off of a cliff, full speed ahead. And I literally sat there and went, no!
I love it. Love it. Love it.
Yes. And then I got to look at my cliff and I went, but I don't want that cliff. And I said, okay. But the most amazing thing that surprised me was, although I was ready to leave, it was on my terms and on my time toward the deepest desire of my heart and what I feel like I was put on the planet to do. When I turned in my keys after 18 and a half years as a professor, I bawled like a baby. And that shocked me more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing when you find the way to step into what you're doing. And even though you know deep in your soul and your heart, this is where you're going, there's an emotional cathartic thing that happens because there's a piece of you that's always been that's emerging as another piece of you says, okay, it's time for me to step backstage now and let this other piece step forward. And I love so much of what you just shared, because as I was listening to you, I'm like, yep, this is the coming out journey. This is the unclosing yourself to go do these things, because it takes that first yes, and then yes, everything else kind of gets exciting and scary and confusing and all. But the more you keep stepping into your yes, the more you realign with who you really are at your core. And your metaphor of the cliff is one of my favorite things that I talk about with my colleagues and on stage and stuff. I say, you know, here's the thing. We all run to the edge of the cliff. We're like, yes, we want to jump. Yes, we want to jump. And then the logic says, no, don't jump. You're going to get hurt. But in the moment that you're standing there and you finally do the jump, that's when the magic happens.
It is so true. I wouldn't trade it. That decision, it's been freeing and it's been wonderful and an exhilarating ride. And I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life because I'm living a life that I truly love and I'm fulfilling my purpose, why I was put on this planet at this time. And that's when I think the world functions best when each of us do that and we're the happiest and function the best. But it was terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious, at the very beginning when you started sharing your story, you know, and you talked about being the little 9-year-old and, you know, I don't want to speak. I'm wondering, how often has that actually come up in your life where until now you probably didn't realize it, that thought as a 9-year-old kept you held back? I don't want to speak. Not just speaking, you know, but subconsciously it says, I don't want to do this and I don't want to do that, because that one thing probably impacted so many other areas of your life, would be my guess.
You know, you're very insightful on that. I think that my tendency, and I think it's most human beings' tendency, is when we get hurt or we get wounded. Yeah. Like that was a day of great shame for me.
Absolutely.
It happened in front of all of my classmates. Mm-hmm. And I got laughed at. And again, this F that I had never received. And so I just turned inward to protect myself. Mm-hmm. And I think throughout our lives, when we have deep wounds like that, wounds of shame, wounds of mostly shame, I think. Mm-hmm. We just say, I don't want to do that ever again. Yeah. And what
we don't want to experience that. We put our armor on and go, okay, that was scary, that hurt, that was painful. So, hold on, let me get my armor on. And anytime we get close to something like that, I'm going to stand back.
Smart.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of times that is good self-preservation, but then there's many, many, many times, and whether I'm talking to people about sexual orientation or making leaps of faith in career or leaving relationships, it's sometimes you got to open the armor back up and go, okay, well, maybe this time I should go this direction. But even that's scary, and it really can be hurtful too.
I think it's scary. I think we open ourselves anytime we take a risk to pain and rejection and failure, which is terrifying. And I think that I wish what the ninth grade girl had been told, or I had had the mental health and the awareness, would be, wait a minute, that's a grumpy man. I call him in my new book, I call him a hacker. Mm-hmm. You know, he actively takes his anger out on other people. And it's like, yeah, I was an annoying, giggling ninth grade girl, but that goes with the territory of speaking.
Exactly.
Taking a speaking class in high school. So I wish that I would have been able to say, wow, what a grump or what a jerk.
Right.
But I did what most of us do, which is I internalized it and I made it about me, where now I'm healthy enough and mature enough that I go, no, that's that person's opinion. That's his bad behavior. Yeah, I had an annoying behavior, but I wasn't deserving of being shamed publicly.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like you tapped into something within yourself that probably was always there, but an awareness of, wait, this isn't always got to be about me. It's okay. I give myself permission to look at these situations and look at them from, maybe it's about them. And not about
me. Yeah, that took me a long time. But I think the older I get and the healthier I get, it's like it's not all about me. And people are entitled to their opinion. They're entitled to their response. They're even entitled to how they behave. But I always get the next choice. And if I were to encounter him today and he were to do that to me, I would say, wait a minute. It's okay that I just did not pass a speech. It's not okay to shame and belittle me. Mm-hmm. And so as an adult who has mental health and boundaries, I can say, you know what, if you want to behave that way, that's fine, but I'm going to put a barrier up between you and me because you're not safe.
Yeah. Where
and he wasn't safe. There are other people who are good people who just at different times say something that's belittling or dream crushing, and they don't even know that they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you brought up this thing about safe, because obviously, you know, in the news and everywhere these days, there's a lot of conversations about, is it safe? Is it, you know, is it good for me? You know, with the Me Too movement and all these other things. And I don't want to turn this into a political thing, but when I look at all of this, it's about us as humans feeling safe. It's the bottom line. And if we don't feel safe, then we either go into our closet. In fact, I'm doing a talk around this with some business people. So another hospitality thing that I'm doing is like, isn't this interesting? This one thing showed up, of course, then I said yes. So I'm kind of following your path right now. Now something else is showing up. But when I said it in the first talk, I said, you know, so how many times do you think in a day your employees don't feel safe in your organization, even though you're the innovators, even though you're the forward-thinking organizations, but they don't feel safe. So they stay in that little closet of their workspace and their work thoughts, and they don't say, wait, I have an idea.
Yeah.
And what would happen if they felt safe to do this? Just like once you started feeling safe and then you said yes to the speech, it suddenly opened up so many different doorways that we don't often see because we don't feel safe.
Exactly. I think you've hit the nail on the head that when we don't feel safe, our energy turns inward. Mm-hmm. And that's within a family, that's within an organization, that's within society. And we're not free to live our best life, to follow our dreams, because we're engaging in self-protection. And one of the things that I do is I help people create relationships and organizations create relationships where people are safe so that their energy is free to move forward. We get one ride on this planet.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to ride it for all it's worth, and I want to change the world. And I can't do that if I'm turned inward and self-protecting, and neither can any of your listeners. And
right.
You and I have both experienced pain. Every listener has experienced pain. And I think that it's our job to create a safe and civil place. One of the things that makes me so sad about where we are is the United States. We're now the divided states. And mm-hmm. We've lost civility, and it's like, wait a minute, what if it were okay to disagree civilly? What if
right.
we
exactly.
still like each other, but we didn't have to adopt each other's ideas. What if we made each other better because instead of bludgeoning each other, we invited each other? It's such a different take on the world than where we exist right now. And it concerns me where we are.
Yeah, and it concerns me, and it kind of ties to your business name. So Shireen's business name is Fully Engaged. And I thought, this is part of the problem now. None of us are being fully engaged in the ways to connect and connect back to each other. We're fully engaged in social media. We're fully engaged in what's good for us. And I'm guilty of this too. So I'm not putting myself up on a pedestal because I see myself do this all the time. But if we were more fully engaged in conversation and being curious about one another and stepping into those spaces, how different would it suddenly be? How many more people would start to come out and say, well, I just want to share this. This is my perspective. And I think we have gotten to a place where we're no longer sharing perspectives unless here's my perspective and you have to agree with this.
Yeah.
So now we're shutting doors, and I see this happening as I'm starting to speak at some businesses. And I definitely see it in the college and university market. You know, these kids show up to college and they're like, okay, I'm here and this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I think it's really powerful in this conversation today, is I asked some students to close their eyes at one of my last talks that I did. And everybody, please be respectful. Don't look. How many of you in this room right now are here in college taking a major that isn't what you want, but you're doing it because somebody else wants you to do it?
I'll raise my hand in public. I'll put two up.
Yeah. How many? It was like full engagement was not present for those kids. It's like, I'm here, but I'm doing my thing, but I'm not doing the thing I really, really want to be doing. And I think this is where these conversations like you and I are having, and I know your new book, so interesting, it's like navigate. It's like, how do you navigate into these things to have these beautiful conversations, to start to open up and really, and your other book, Pick, Choose the Life You Want to Live. So I just put a whole bunch out there. So I pretty much set her up, listeners, for her to talk about these great books she's doing. But I think they drive right to the core of what we're talking about today.
I think the whole thing that I care about, my expertise is human relations, and yeah. I love helping people understand people. So when we understand ourselves, we do better. When we understand others, we do better. Uh-huh. I believe it was Maya Angelou who said, when we know better, we do better.
Exactly.
And so my books are all about figuring out who you are. Because here's what my observation is people who are truly happy in who they are and they're living the life that they were designed and created to live have joy and freedom in allowing other people the freedom to make their choices. My observation is when people have made life-limiting choices, mm-hmm. they don't have the emotional energy and bandwidth to give other people. And it's a lot easier to tear someone down than to do the hard work of figuring out what you want and navigating the people in your life and the circumstances in your life and everything in your life that says, nah, that's not a good idea. Mm-hmm. In your heart, you know it's the right thing. And so I love helping people understand themselves and others. And then they can create a happier life, healthier relationships, and enjoy greater success in and out of the workplace.
I'm curious because I think this is kind of where you're going. But what I sense so often is if you don't know how to navigate to know yourself, then you're never going to figure out how to navigate to know other people.
No, and I think we so often when we are looking at navigating other people and not ourselves, we're navigating how they can make us happy.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
Very quick to be offended at how they upset us. And I think when we know ourselves, we can stay true to who we are. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a journey. I started as a client to a counselor in my mid-20s, and I actually had to learn how I felt about stuff and what I liked and what I didn't like. And as I began to tell myself the truth, then I could tell other people the truth. And so I think so much of our life is our journey into figuring out who we are. And I call it playing hot and cold with your heart. You know, it's that children's game, cold, cold, cold. Well, let's stay away from cold. Lukewarm's okay, that's good, but it's not great. So let's not stop at lukewarm. Let's play and have enough access to our heart to get to hot, hot, hot. And that's with safe relationships. That's with a job that really works. That's with a life that works for you. And
absolutely.
I see so many people, and I'm sure you do too, they live life in gray. And I believe we were created to live in technicolor, but you have to take risks to live in technicolor.
It's so interesting you just brought that up, because one of my key things that I talk about here on the podcast and on stage is we have to step from black and white, but some people and a lot of people can't go to the technicolor. So you have to step from the black and white into the gray. You got to get comfortable playing in the gray before you can see the beautiful spectrum of colors that brings everything else to life. And I think oftentimes I see this in the college environment a lot. The students are very stuck in black and white. It's like, okay, I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to do this. Okay, I'm supposed to get this. And then suddenly they can't think of this bigger picture. And I have one in that market space. And so, of course, she ends up being my guinea pig a lot of times too. But she's also she's really someone very interesting to observe, because it helps me really get into, get into the mindset of the young millennial college university student and try to understand, have they become disengaged because there is so much other distraction, or have they become disengaged because they're just following what they think everybody else says they're supposed to be doing? So it creates a really interesting dynamic to start to observe all this and go, okay, are they being navigated, or are they trying to navigate themselves, but everything else is getting in the way of allowing them to navigate themselves?
I think you ask wonderful questions. It reminds me, I did my master's in student affairs, and there was a theorist, his name was Perry, and he talked about cognitive development and how when we are like freshmen, we are very black and white thinkers. This is right, this is wrong. Uh-huh. And then over time, we begin to adopt what everybody else thinks. And then over time, we begin to become authentic with who we are. And some people do that journey quicker than others. Uh-huh. But I think if we don't navigate through to living authentically who we are and what we believe, we can never be our best version.
So as you wrote this book about understanding, you know, people's types and navigating, my guess would be you started to find some very interesting patterns of what shows up, because you came up with five types of people. So there's, you know, there's lots of books out there, but I'm always interested what another author looks at and sees. And I don't want to give away the whole thing, but there's got to be a couple of patterns you noticed as you were writing the book.
It was fascinating to me when I started really looking at people. One thing is, one of the most life-changing events for me in knowledge was Gary Chapman's five love languages, affirmation, quality time, gifts, service, and touch. And he was actually a professor of mine, and I've kept in touch with him through the years, on and off, and had his permission to speak about that all around the world. And it transcends gender, it transcends culture, transcends race. It was just so fascinating to me. And so I actually started praying that God would give me something as simple and profound that would change the world as the five love languages. And I was talking to my dad about this book that I was wanting to write, and I had shared earlier this prayer and deep desire of my heart. And in the middle of me talking to my father, he said, "Well, that's your five love languages, honey." And I went, "Oh." And so I came up with these five types of people. You have high flyers. These are the people who get stuff done. They're conscientious. They're driven. They are just like rock stars in life. They are like, boom, they just march and go. And their biggest risk is being burned out and not taking care of themselves because they want to please other people. And in the workplace, people just give them more and more work because they're so reliable. So burnout is their thing that they have to watch the most. And then I noticed there are these steady gliders, and they're conscientious and reliable, but they're not a high flyer. They're driven by relationship and stuff outside of work. And so they kind of fall through the cracks a bit. They don't demand attention. They get stuff done. You don't have to ride them. But they also just kind of fly under the radar always. And so with them, they're at risk of getting looked over. And that's often young women who haven't found their voice yet. And we got to look at these people. We've got to mentor them. We've got to give them opportunities and to ask them and to help them figure out what their sweet spot is so that they can soar. And so that intrigued me. And then I thought, okay, there have been times in my life where I just couldn't push through where I needed to go for the next level. And I was a lacker. And so there are mindset lackers and skill set lackers. And when it's a skill set like a language or math or computers or technology, you can provide skill set training and it works. But if skill set training doesn't work, there's a mindset problem. Yep. And so until you fix the mindset problem, the skill training will never work. Mm-hmm. I remember back in my first job, it was a bit of a hot mess and I was depressed. It was a bad job for me. It was very administrative. I had the imposter syndrome. Every day I would dress up and go to work, but I wondered if that would be the day they'd figure out I had no idea what I was doing. So within a year, I was just clinically depressed. Right. And they sent me to a Franklin Covey time management seminar. Uh-huh. It didn't work. It was expensive. They bought me tools, but it taught me how to manage my time, but it was missing the mindset problem, which is, of course, I'm in a bad fit. There, let's figure out what's going on.
Right.
So if you've got a hurdle you can't come overcome, it's a mindset problem.
Always is.
Yeah, so you want to work with a coach or a counselor or somebody who can help you rewrite and overcome your internal barriers so that you can achieve success. And so we've got the high flyers, the steady gliders, the lackers, and then you have the slackers. And these are the people who coast in life. And very often, if you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs, they're the P's. And so they are last-minute Lucys. They're energized by deadlines. And yes, there are some people who are inherently lazy and don't want to work, and they don't mind that they're not working causes other people more work. But usually in the slacker category are people who are naive and people who are happy to let somebody else do their work if it means they have more fun. So you got to have really good boundaries and deadlines with these people because they're motivated by deadlines. Mm-hmm. And so I consider myself a mature slacker who is a high flyer in my chosen endeavors.
Yeah. Well, I would assume that what you've also discovered, and I know there's one more, but that you kind of can be some of each, but something's going to rise to the top. And yes. I know from the energy work that I do with my clients, it's like, okay, this is your predominant energy, but your secondary is this. You're going to have all of them, but here's how you typically show up in life. This is,
That's it exactly, because the last one are hackers, and the hackers are people who are actively trying to cause problems. And so I look at lacker hackers is the first type of hacker, and they don't have conflict resolution skills. So they're upset. They don't know how to talk to you about it. And so instead of having a civil conversation like we've talked about, they take jabs at people or they get loud and abusive, and they're lacking something. They just don't have conflict resolution skills. Mm-hmm. And if you can help them develop conflict resolution skills, then they don't need to be a hacker. And the problem is solved. But there are also people, and the research says in the United States of America that up to 17% of the population has a personality disorder. Wow. And those are people, that's a little, look at me, circling. That's a little.
Okay, that's a wake up call right there, you know?
Yeah, so these people have some mental health issues. They lack empathy. They don't take responsibility. They don't think that anything is ever their fault. And so some of them crave drama. And so you'll watch hidden hackers, they will tell a lie. They create disloyalty. They just love to stir the pot, but they do it behind the scenes. Mm. And those are hard to find for a while, but distrust starts to raise to the surface. And something changes in your culture when you have a hidden hacker working. And as soon as you figure that out, then you can address it. Mm. And then the ones that I watch over and over again are what I call overt hackers. And these people, they are bullies. They are sarcastic. They control people by creating fear. So the speech teacher that I had was a hacker. Mm-hmm. He controlled by creating fear. Who wants to be humiliated in front of your peers?
Absolutely.
And so these people are very, very powerful and very aggressive. And in the book, we talk about what my good friend Dr. Suzanne Hobson came up with. You either problem solve or you problem manage. And you need to tell yourself the truth. If you can solve the problem, then work on solving it. But if you can't solve it, then you need to move into problem management. Mm-hmm. And in my own career, I got really tripped up in trying to problem solve what I should have been working on problem managing. And I think perhaps as this all ties together for me in my mind, that when people want to control our lives, when they tell us because they're afraid or whatever reason that our dreams aren't valid, that we shouldn't be playing big, we we sometimes always engage in problem solve, but problem solve isn't always the answer. Sometimes it's just problem management.
Mm-hmm. And you have to work
with somebody.
You know, yeah. As you were saying that, I think that was the, you know, nail on the head sort of comment to me is I realize as I work with people in their coming out process, whatever that is, but I'll go to the sexuality closet first. They know the problem is they're afraid to be who they are.
Yes.
Okay. So they can get past that, but then they go create the next problem, which is how am I going to get everybody else to embrace me? Well, that can be a problem you can solve, or in your words, it may just have to be a problem you manage. And I think a majority of people who have come out of the sexuality closet, they get stuck in trying to manage the problem of getting other people to accept them. And then they spiral and they just keep spiraling that I'm not going to be loved. I'm going to be rejected. And the beauty is when you realize, okay, I just have to manage that. And part of the management may mean I get off that carousel and just go do my thing. That's when they start to thrive. And so I bring that now back to what you just said. This can be done in any situation. You can decide, as you just said so beautifully, Shireen, you can either problem solve or you can problem manage. Whether you want to be an entrepreneur or you don't want to be an entrepreneur. Do you want to be in a relationship? You don't want to be in a relationship. Do you want to lose the weight or you don't? It's so interesting that so many of these things, and you know, like you and I are kind of talking on the same wavelength. We're just using different metaphors. The closet is about either managing the closet or solving the problem to get out of the closet. It's that simple.
I agree. And I spent so much of my life in trying to problem solve when what was called for was problem management. And once I figured that out, I quit bloodying my head against the same wall.
Because it gets tiring. It gets hurtful. There's no reason for us
so
to do this.
Yeah. Because we keep thinking if we just say it the right way, if we just tell them these are people who love us, who want to understand us. And it's like, yeah. And sometimes you just have to problem manage.
Yeah. And if you, and sometimes the manage may be that you just problem manage yourself out of even dealing with the problem. You just go, okay, I can't do this. In fact, I posted something, I guess it was this morning on Facebook, and my youngest daughter, she's like very much an outspoken little advocate and very self-aware of, you know, her own self. And I said, some days ... fill in the blank. And she posted on Facebook, some days it's okay not to feel okay. And that's okay. And I thought, there you go. That is just one of those beautiful moments where you could see somebody who really gets this, but somebody else would go, oh no, I can't not feel okay. That just, you know, okay, then you need to problem solve that for yourself. But what if you just learn to manage that? It's okay not to be okay in this moment. Totally different way of being in life.
It's revolutionary. And what a wise little freshman in college. You understand.
I was kind of like, I did. I got a little teary. I go, okay, that's my little baby girl. She's kind of get this right on, you know?
So, oh, I would feel great pride because it's like, who figures that out at age 18 or 19?
Exactly.
I was literally sitting in a cafe with another friend who's a counselor educator. My PhD is in counselor education. And I was sharing with her my five types, and she shared with me that, yeah, sometimes you problem solve and sometimes you problem manage. Her name's Dr. Suzanne Hobson. She has a new married last name that's escaping me. Mm. But anyway, that was one of the most life-changing sentences that I have ever heard, because I went, oh my gosh, I have this heart. I'm wired to do what's right. I want you to be happy. I want me to be happy. I want good to prevail. And so many times I've picked up these fights that aren't mine to pick up. And I'm at so much more peace and so much more willing to allow other people the freedom to be who they are and to say for myself what does and doesn't work for me. And I will fight for primary relationships, but I'm not going to fight for every relationship. There are some people, as Maya Angelou says, when people tell you who they are, believe them. And it's like, okay, you told me who you are, and I believe you. And that's okay with me if you want to be that way, but you don't get access to my heart, to my dreams, to my life.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes that I use with my clients is, if this wasn't your fight to fight today, what would you do with your
life? Wow. What a great question.
Because it's suddenly like, okay, if I step away from this, what would I do with this time now? But we get in that space, and I have to be really honest, I was in that space just before we were getting ready to record this. I've been in that space for a better part of my day today because something happened, and I'm like, okay. And I finally thought, okay, Rick, what would you tell a client right now? And I thought, if you, this wasn't your fight to fight right now, what else would you be doing? And I, okay, it's time to move on. It's time to go practice my speech. It's time to go do some other stuff. That fight's still going to be there, but let's go shift. And even in the moments that we were stepping into this, and then now, of course, in the midst of this beautiful conversation, I'm like, oh, I have a solution to this. And sometimes that's what it takes, is stepping away from the fight, getting away from the problem, managing it instead of trying to solve it. And then you suddenly step into the most beautiful space you're supposed to be in. So
I would agree with that. And what I think where we are as a society, tying it back to that, is we've become the thought police. We want to control how people think.
Yep.
We want to control everything around us. And it's, I think mental health is the ability to allow people the freedom to be where they are. Now, I don't think that it's okay for people to be abusive and to be hackers.
Right.
People's rights stop where the next person's rights begin. But I also think so much of our problem is self-inflicted and the desire to control. And we're losing our tolerance for a dissenting voice. And it's like, it's just a disagreement.
Right.
We can agree to what if we agreed to disagree? And we could create a civil place where it doesn't sound like unicorns and rainbows, but where love abounds, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. What if we could just agree to disagree? It's, and still be friends and treat each other with civility. And
but I think you hit the nail on the head. This thing of tolerance, it's almost like tolerance has become a dirty word. And it's like, okay, if you take tolerance out of the picture, what if you just said, let me hear you, or let me understand you, or let me try to empathize with you. I mean, you know, we always have these words. So authenticity showed up, you know, all these words kind of show up, and then suddenly they get, I kind of feel like tolerance is kind of starting to get there where everybody's saying, well, be tolerant. I'm like, okay, let's not make this the dirty word, but what if we just loved each other? Doesn't mean we have to agree. Doesn't mean we have to be in the same space, but love each other for being human and realizing we all have different ways we approach life, plain and simple.
I say home run, and my only thought is you have to do a lot of your own mental health work to be.
I agree 100%.
Other people choosing differently than you do.
So your new book is called Navigate, and it's the five. Go ahead and finish that off there.
Understanding the five types of people.
Wow. That's awesome. And it is out. It's available on Amazon. We'll have show notes with the links to all that. And before we wrap up, first of all, I've enjoyed this conversation immensely.
That was the word that popped into my mind, immensely.
I can't wait to actually. So I think most of my listeners know I rarely get to meet most of my guests in person, but I'm really looking forward to this when we do, because we're both part of National Speakers Association. But before we wrap it up, if you could like leave that one last beautiful gem of wisdom about how someone can really step forward to live their life uncloseted, be who they're meant to be, make that bold move, navigate through to be the person you're really supposed to be, and choose your life. What would you like to leave the listeners with before we wrap it up here?
I think you have to listen to the whispers of your soul, and you have to begin to tell yourself the truth before you can tell anybody else the truth. And that once we know our truth, then it comes down to courage, and we can't bludgeon or push anybody else any faster than they're ready, willing, or able to go, just as nobody could have pushed me any quicker. But I think it's listening, knowing who we are, creating a life that we love so that we can allow other people to live a life that they love.
I love that. I love the whispers of our soul. That's so so rich. So, well, Shireen, thank you for being here and sharing your wisdom and being you and doing what you do. And I encourage everyone to get her books. They just sound delicious to me. I know I'm going to go get them as soon as the new one's out, for sure. But thank you again for taking time out of your wonderful life to share yourself.
Thank you for the privilege and for the work that you do. And I look forward to when we meet in person too. I had a blast talking with you today.
I did too.
When souls connect and talk about really cool ideas. Mm-hmm. And what a nice, juicy, satisfying conversation. Mm.
And I think that's a beautiful place to wrap it up. So thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end, but that's okay. We're going to be back in just a couple of days sharing more stories, tips, tricks, and wisdom for helping you live your life uncloseted. And you know what? You can share it too. Just take a few moments if you like and if you believe in this podcast and share it with someone you know today. Share it from your phone, go share it on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you are. Maybe even give us a rating and review because you know what? It's all about the planet living their life uncloseted. I'm Rick Clemens, host of the show and the guy who helps you make those big, bold moves. And I hope you never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your life uncloseted. Catch you real soon. Take care, everyone.